So could you introduce yourself and tell me who you are, where you're from, and when you were born?
Okay, I am George Saris, and I was born in Liberty, which is about a mile and a half west of Osage. Right now I'm 79 years old. I was born in 1940, March the 15th. And my father built a restaurant, built a two-story building in Osage with his cousin. It was called Nick and John's. He was Nick. He had the restaurant on a street level, and upstairs, we called in the Greek custom. Anyone older than you, you called him Uncle. So Uncle John lived upstairs. He had five bedrooms up there. One was his. He rented out some of the others. And this was before whiskey by the drink was legal or wine by the drink was legal. He sold liquor by the drink. And, of course, like I say, my father had the restaurant downstairs, and it was 100% legit. I was 10 years old when he opened the restaurant, and if he wasn't in the restaurant, if he had to go out for a second and someone wanted a bottle of beer, I'd have to ask them to come around and take it out of the cooler. I wasn't allowed to touch it.
Where were your parents from? Tell me about
that. Okay, my father came from the island of Crete, and my mother, her parents came from the island of Crete also. My father, before he opened the restaurant, he was a coal miner there in Scotch Run. And my grandfather also worked in a coal mine and lived in Persglove, which is half, just next to Osage, just halfway between Liberty and Osage.
What were your parents' names?
My father was Nick Saris, and my grandparents, my mother's maiden name was Panos, P-A-N-O-S.
Did your dad ever work in the mines, or did he just...
Yeah, he worked in the mines, and he went from the mines to the restaurant. And he died in 1969, April the 1st, and I got black lung for my mother. They found spots on his lungs, and they had been there for many years. So he started out working in Colorado. His brother came here first from Greece, went to Colorado, was working in a coal mine, sent for my father. My father worked in a coal mine. His brother became a U.S. citizen. And on his way out of the mine, on the last day that he was to work, he was going to go into the First World War, he was electrocuted and died. So my father left Colorado at that time, went to California, and he just kind of wandered until he ended up in Scotch Run.
Why did he decide to leave the mines and start the restaurant?
Well, I think because of the danger in the coal mines, and he had five children, you know, my wife and five children, so I believe that was the main reason.
Was Liberty mostly a Greek community?
Not mostly. That we had about every type of nationality you could think of. It was a very small community, but I know of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, maybe 6 families, Greek families that lived there, but there were a lot of Greeks in the Scotch Run area.
What were the other ethnicities in Liberty?
Well, there's a combination. It was integrated. There were blacks and whites. It was Polish, Hungarian, Russian, Croatian, Serbian, and Americans, you know, people born in this country. So there were quite a few, probably 8-9 different nationalities.
And did you interact with all different types of people?
All of them. We all were. It was a real nice community. It was real clean. Everyone kept up their yards or houses. Everyone helped each other out. We didn't even have locks on our doors or our windows. And today I live in a development, you know, in a pretty nice development, and we keep our doors locked 24 hours a day. Mm-hmm. There at Liberty, we'd go on vacation for a week or two, never locked the doors or never had locks or doors on the windows.
What are some of your memories hanging out in the restaurant?
The main thing that I remembered in the restaurant is that, of course, I would say 90% of our business was black, and the blacks had a lot of respect for my father, and in turn, that was probably the safest place for me in the world was Osage, because the blacks wouldn't allow anyone to bother me. I was safe. I could go to Osage any 24 hours a day, and I never had to worry.
And you were saying that your, so it was your uncle who had the...
He had the upstairs of the restaurant. We called him uncle. He was actually a distant cousin, but he was part of the family, and I don't know, for some reason I was his favorite, and I stayed with him quite a bit.
What are some of your childhood memories of playing and growing up in Liberty?
Well, in Liberty, we had we probably had 10, 12 kids that were within 2-3 years, you know, same age or 2-3 years of my age, and we all, you know, we rode bicycles, we played cowboys and Indians, the great game was marbles, and just sat around, and we would read, we all had comic books, and we'd get together, say, on a Saturday morning, and everybody'd bring their comic books, and we would sit for hours and just read comic books.
You remember?
Yeah, a lot of the cowboys, Roy Rogers and Gene Autry and Hopalong Cassidy and Dick Tracy, and those are the only ones I could think of right off the bat, but my favorite was always cowboy.
Uh-huh. So this would have been before your time, but did you know of families that had left Scott's Run to go to Arthurdale?
I didn't know any of the people that actually went to Arthurdale. I know people that I know a family that lived in the development, but they bought it after the development actually was considered a failure, that concept. Mm-hmm. But and you know, they're trying to revive it now. Well, they have, but I was not involved. It was before my time, and that was President, Eleanor Roosevelt was mainly responsible for that. Mm-hmm. But they wouldn't take, all they took from Scotch Run to go to Arthurdale, you had to be white. They wouldn't take any foreigners, they wouldn't take any blacks. Mm-hmm.
I read that you couldn't be below a certain, you couldn't be extremely poor. They
only took the... That I don't know. That I don't know.
So a lot of people tell Eleanor Roosevelt stories or have them in your family. Did you hear or did you have Eleanor Roosevelt stories that circulated?
The only thing is I heard those stories, And at first I was really a Roosevelt fan because of what they did, you know. But then when I got to thinking about the way they selected the people, and they thought, I understand, I read someplace that, that the foreigners are thought of less than the blacks, and the poor blacks, you know, they, you know how they were discriminated. So when I put all of that together, then I get upset with the Roosevelts.
I'm interested in the way that she's, or they're both kind of celebrated in Scott's Run, but it seems like there was a, it's more complicated than that.
What, with the Roosevelts?
Yeah.
Well, what happened was, is Eleanor Roosevelt came up Scott's Run, and if we just forget about that Arthur Dell, she visited people's homes, she visited the settlement house, and she was very concerned about the coal miners. She was concerned about the conditions that they had to live in, and the economic conditions of Scott's Run. She, you have to give her credit, she was concerned about that, mm-hmm. and kept coming back to Scott's Run. So she was really, by the majority of the people, she was very highly thought of. And the only thing I had against them was the way they selected the people to go to this Arthur Dell mm-hmm. Heritage.
So when did you leave Scott's Run?
I stayed there till I was 25 years old, and that's when I got married.
Oh, wow.
And I moved to Westover. I had a house built when was ready about 2 weeks after we were married, and my first job out of college was in Fairmont with Galus Manufacturing, but I lived in Westover, and I was in a carpool and mm-hmm. worked there for 6 years. Mm-hmm. And then I went with Consol as a controller of the Blacksville mines. They started up the two Blacksville mines, and then ultimately became controller for Northern West Virginia, the Northern West Virginia region of Consol.
Where did you go to college?
WVU. I got a BS in business administration and a major in accounting.
And did you live in Scott's Run when you were going to school? Or?
Yeah. Wow. I lived in Scott's Run, and I worked. My father closed a restaurant down, and he had to have an operation. He had to have a couple operations. And so he closed the restaurant and kind of retired. And I got a job going when I was in high school and college at Max's Family Store in Osage. Mm-hmm. And I worked for Max for 8 years. And when I graduated from college in 1963, I had the keys to his store, because when he wasn't able to come, I ran the store for him. And I would say that he had as much business as any clothing store in Morgantown. He was a very, very good fella, and he helped so many people in Scott's Run. But anyway, I gave him his keys back when I graduated from college. I got a job with Galus, and he wouldn't take them back. I still have them in my jewel box. And he said, if you ever want to come back, he said, just open the store. And he would come and visit me at least after I graduated. After I got married, you could ask my wife. He would come to our house at least once a month. And he wanted to open a store in Morgantown that put me in business. Mm-hmm. And the store was similar to what Gabe's is right now. And it was before Gabe's came to town.
Okay.
And the reason I wouldn't, I told him no one would do something like that for me except my father. But he treated me as a son. He had a son, and his son died. He probably was maybe 35, 40 years old when he died. And he lived in Cleveland, and they couldn't get together they couldn't get along as far as the business was concerned, but they were still mm-hmm. close family. Mm-hmm. And they weren't sure what he died from. Some people tell me today it probably would have been diagnosed as Legionnaire's disease, but I don't know that for sure. Okay. But anyway, he treated me just like a son.
Oh. And that was a clothing store
It was for everyone. It was from the time you were born till the time you were till you died. When any customer of his that had a baby, he gave them their first pair of suits. And when they got a little older and the family would come in the store, he would always have a box of suckers in back of the counter. And he'd ask the parents if it was okay on the side for them to have a sucker. Mm-hmm. And they'd say yes. And he would tell the kids, go on in back of the counter, get yourself a sucker. And they would do that. And he was really smart, because the next time they wanted to go clothing shopping, those kids said, we want to go to Maxis.
Right, exactly.
So, but he was an honest man. My biggest job when I first started working for him was to move old. There was a lot of foreigners that had worked in the coal mines and they had retired. And they didn't have anyone to take care of them. And when it got to the point that they needed someone to take care of them, Max would find somebody that would take care of them. And he had a old Willys Jeep. And that was my job, to get their bed and their dresser and to take it to wherever the person was going to stay. And he made sure that somebody took care of them. And when they died, even though he was Jewish, he found a minister to bury them. A lot of the people in those days, especially during the 1950s, we had a recession, and a lot of people lost their jobs. And Max would see the parents and he'd say, listen, it's time for school to start. Your children need clothes. Come in the store, get whatever you need. We'll put it on your bill. When you get a job, just start paying $5 a pay, whatever. Mm-hmm. And he did that. I don't know very many people that would do something like that, would take that type of risk. Mm-hmm. There were people that were about to lose their houses. He would sign for loans. Mm-hmm. I know in some cases where he actually signed for people to buy the house, he would co-sign so that they could own the house, and they paid it off, and then it was theirs. But that's the way he was. His philosophy was, if you can't do a man any good, don't do him any harm, and he lived by that.
And did he live in Scott's Run ever?
No, he lived in Morgantown We lived on Grand Street, Grand and Maple, and I'm trying to think of the section of town. But anyway, he lived in Morgantown, in a real nice section in Morgantown.
Did you always maintain ties with Scott's Run?
Me?
Yeah, after you had moved away.
Well, I always went to... you know, there was a shoe shop in Osage, and I always took my shoes to Osage. And by that time, a lot of the businesses had, you know, a lot of them had quit. People had closed down their businesses. But my father had that building, and even though he died, I rented it out, and people ran it as a beer garden for years. And it's still there today, but evidently, I mean, it's obvious, it caught on fire at one time, and the top floor had burnt, and now they have a slanted roof and maybe just one apartment upstairs. But it had a sun porch on it, and it was right in the middle of Osage and right on the curve, and you could look down the street, and you could look up the street. And my father gave the key to that top floor to the policeman, Osage policeman. At night, he would go up there and he could watch the whole street.
Mm-hmm. So when did you start going to the museum, the coffee shop?
Well, Probably it's only been maybe a year and a half or so. Albert Anderson kept talking about it, and he said, "Come on down." So I went down one Saturday. I knew the cultures. I had forgotten about them, and but I knew the whole. You know, I knew the family, and they were very nice to me. And then there were people coming in from all over the United States. I mean, there maybe it'd be 15 or 20 people in there on a Saturday, but three or four of them would be from, you just don't know, from all over the United States, and their grandfather or their father or one of their relatives had worked in a coal mine, and they heard about that museum, and they wanted to come and look through the books that are up there and see if there's any, they could find any pictures of their relatives. That's okay. And then I just got it just became a nice place to have a cup of coffee and mm-hmm. talk. A lot of the people that come in there were friends of mine years ago, and so I really enjoy it. And Mary Jane, she's just as nice as she could be. She offers you coffee and something to eat. And, so I'm trying to help them raise some money so that they can continue operating that place. I know it's tough on Mary Jane. It's her building, and she runs it. And we're checking some sources in Morgantown, some of the industries, and see if they won't put in their contributions budget the museum.
Nice. There also might be grants available.
Yeah, there are, and I think that she's probably aware of them because she's very close to E. Falks,
right,
who's a professor at the Creative Arts Center, and they're very close, and I'm sure that she's probably helped her, has suggestions for as far as some of the grants are concerned.
Who are some of the people who are your friends there, either new friends or that you knew?
Well, the first one that I would have to say would be Lou Baraikas. He lives in Morgantown. He was our next-door neighbor in Liberty. And his mother is the one that taught my mother how to cook and how to bake. My mother was married when she was... she got 16. Her first son was born when she was 17. I was born when she was 18. Mm-hmm. My sister was born when she was 19. She skipped a year, then she had twins.
Wow.
So 21 years old, she had five children. Jeez. And my father was working in a coal mine. And Lou Baraikas' mother helped my mother. They lived, I mean, wasn't 100 yards away. And she taught my mother how to bake, and my wife learned how to bake for my mother the Greek pastries. My mother had nothing written down, but my wife would go over when she baked and help her, and she would, my mother would say, "Well, use a pinch of this," and Barbara would measure it and write it down. So she came up with the book with all my mother's recipes. And she gave a copy of those books to Lou's daughters because she said, "Your grandmother's the one that taught my mother-in-law how to bake."
That's very cool.
But Lou played football for WVU, and he had three other brothers and a sister. And our families were very close. Their family was from the island of Crete also. And Lou's father was a coal miner. And so we were very, you know, very close. And then I worked in the restaurant there, and I knew Albert Anderson. I used to serve him pie and milk every night when he came back from Perry's Shoe Shop in Morgantown where he was working. And I just knew everybody in Osage. And I, like I said, I went to Osage Junior High School, so I knew a lot of the people that are my age had come in there, that went to school there. So
What did they serve at the restaurant?
My father's restaurant, he served about anything that you wanted. I mean, his special on Sundays was cream chicken, but he had steaks and hamburgers, and he always had chili and vegetable soup homemade, and he always had a special every day, and spare ribs and cabbage, I know, was one of the big items that the people liked. And but it was, you know, it was just a complete restaurant, but he also sold beer. Yeah, he sold pie. Yeah. Pie and coffee. And,
who was the cook?
My father.
And you made the pies too? You did
all no, we bought the pies. And but my father was probably a better cook than my mother. Mm. I mean, he was a great cook. Beef stew. I've never tasted beef stew better than what he made.
Wow. Where did he learn to make those American recipes?
Well, if you would study the Greeks, most of the Greeks went into the restaurant business. Mm-hmm. And after he left the coal mine in Colorado and he started traveling, he had friends, Greek friends, that had restaurants. And he worked in those restaurants out in California. Then he went to Detroit, and I don't know of any restaurants that he worked in Detroit, but I know he was in Detroit. Then he ended up in Scotch Run in the coal mines. But he did work in restaurants throughout the country.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to talk a little bit about the way people remember Scotch Run versus the way you remember it or the way it actually was?
Well, I could tell you that you wouldn't hardly believe Scotch when you're talking about Scotch Run or Osage.
Well, you were talking about how maybe some people romanticize the area.
Well, let me just say that Osage, as I recall, and I added them up a little while ago, they had 5 grocery stores, 2 barber shops, 2 shoe repair shops. There was a dentist there. There was a woman had a jewelry store there. There was a couple clothing stores, Max's and another Jewish fella, Levingston. And all during the day, you would see cars and people on the streets. You know, they were going to the grocery stores. We didn't have Kroger's then and Giant Eagle. They had the AMP in Morgantown, and our family would maybe drive there once a week or every other week and go to the AMP. But most of the time, you bought your groceries at these local grocery stores, and there were no carts. You know, they weren't big enough to have a cart. You just picked the things from the shelves and put them on the counter. But there were a lot of people there, and particularly on Saturdays. Saturday, you could hardly find a place to park in Osage. Friday nights and Saturday nights, people would dress up, particularly the black people. They would dress up, I guess you call them African Americans. I don't want to say the wrong word, but anyway, I mean, I was friends with all of them, neighbors, but they would come from Morgantown, and you thought you were in Hollywood. I mean, you couldn't believe the way the people dressed, the suits and shoes, and the people at Osage would do the same thing, and they would all come down to Osage on Friday night and Saturday night, and sometimes things got a little rowdy, and somebody got shot or stabbed, but it was a busy town. Uh-huh. It's a busy town.
Yeah, I think Miss Sarah was talking about hopping the train all dressed up to get a mile ride down to, I think, to Osage from where she lived.
They used to have I guess a trolley. And that was before my time to run through Scotch Run and ran up, they tell me, to Blacksville. Mm-hmm. I don't remember that. That was before my time. Miss Sarah, I think, is 96 years old, yes. And I just turned 79. So what she said is what my father said. There was a trolley that went up through there. And
yeah, I read that too.
Yeah, so. Yeah. But it was a busy place. Like I say, even all during the week, especially on Saturdays, people would come and do their shopping. And one time there was an article in the paper that said that it's the only town in the United States where the cars park on the sidewalk and the people walk out in the streets. Well, it really didn't have sidewalks. So you didn't know when you pulled in the park, you didn't know how close you were to the building for sure, so... But there was no sidewalks.
Mm-hmm. What do you think the importance of the museum is for the community?
Well, it lets all of, like I say, the people that come back, they come back and they see their relatives. There's a lot of old coal mining equipment there. They get an idea of how the old coal miners had to work. You know, they had carbide lamps. They had to buy their own carbide. And they learn about the way coal mining was and the union, the miners being, joining unions. Mm-hmm. And I have to admit, I was in administration at Consol, and probably the best compliment that I ever received was that if they went on strike, we had to go to Elkins to get an injunction before a federal judge, and I always represented Consol in getting those injunctions. And the union, one day we were down there, and they were all out on strike, all the coal mines in the area. And the union asked for a recess, and I went outside, and I was smoking the smoke cigarette. And one of the union presidents came out, and he said that our lawyer said you're the only one that he believes from Consol. I wouldn't lie. You know, my father was I don't lie, period. But in addition to that, my father was a coal miner, and he told me how they had to dig the coal with the pick and shovel, and they would load it into the cars, and it was the company people that would check the cars and give you credit for the cars, and they would weigh the cars. And there were a lot of times they didn't give you credit for all the cars that you loaded. They didn't give you credit for all of the weight that was in the cars. So I was very sympathetic, and it's always been my philosophy that the only time you have a union is when you aren't treating the people correctly. And my father fought for the unions. He started out in Colorado. So I was very close. I lived with union people all around me. I lived with some people that were foremen. But it didn't make any difference. I got along with all of them.
Did you ever face discrimination for being from Scott's Run?
No, I never did. I'm Greek Orthodox. We've had our Greek Orthodox. You know, at that time, you belonged to the Greek Orthodox Church if you were Greek Orthodox. Mm-hmm. Today, we're trying to say it's an Orthodox Church rather than a Greek Orthodox. Mm-hmm. But my family was... My father and my mother and father were highly respected in the Greek community, and they were respected in the community where we lived. And I never once felt discriminated. I went to St. Francis after Osage, and there was no one there was one girl in my class that was from the from that area. But other than that, that was about it. But There was no discrimination. I never felt any discrimination or anyone looking down on me because I was from Scotch Run. Mm-hmm.
Well, is there anything else you would like to add?
The only thing I'd like to add is it's just too bad that it's run down. You know, you go through there now, and it's run down. You go up to Liberty. Lou's son has bought several of the houses and has remodeled them. But prior to that, it looked like, what would you call, just a run-down community. I was almost ashamed to drive through there, comparing it to what it used to be. But today, with Lou's son is trying to build some of the buildings. Osage lost some of the buildings are down. You see wax, glass wax on a lot of the buildings as you come in on the, if you come in from the school on the right-hand side, and they have names of what they do there. The building that we owned, the fellow that owns it now, took me through it, mm-hmm. And I said, "What do you have here?" He says, "It's a bottle club." Well, I went through it. There's nothing there. There isn't anything there. There's a bathroom. I think it was one little bar and a few stools. There wasn't a kitchen. I don't know what goes on there. What kind of? He said, "It's a bottle club.
It's a bottle club.
Where you bring your own bottle."
Okay.
Where is that? Is it right across?
Across the street from the museum.
Okay. I think I know what building you're talking about.
Yeah. And Osage had they called it the spot. It was a pool room. It was next door to my father's restaurant.
Uh-huh. I've seen the
yeah.
Sign on the building.
Yeah. Well, the building, there was an older building right beside it. When you look at the spot from across the street, there was an older building beside it. And my father and uncle bought it. And then they built this building, and it was a two-story, and the only one that had a porch on it mm-hmm. in those days, you know, second story.
Right.
Well, and I heard Louis is trying to start a museum.
Lou Baracus, with all of his archives.
I didn't know that, but I've been to Lou's house and his office. Is probably about the size of this dining room here. I imagine maybe 10 by 12. And on one whole wall, he has notebooks, that three-ring binders, and it's by year. He has the history. He went through the newspapers in Morgantown. They were all stored, I guess, the old... probably fish copies, I'm not sure, in the old law building. And he'd go there every day, and anything you could find about Scotch Run, Osage, Liberty, Purse Club, whatever, he recorded it. He would either get a picture of it or write it and put the date that it was in the newspaper if he wrote it.
Mm-hmm.
And so he has, as far as history is concerned, he has a lot of that.
Yeah, I need to visit there.
And I've read a lot of those books.
Mm-hmm.
So it when you read those books, you find out that just about everybody in Osage and Purse Club and Liberty were arrested at one point in time for moonshine. And you'd be surprised. I mean, we're talking about some of the elderly ladies, you know, and I thought it was quite amusing.
That's funny. Yeah, I need to pay him a visit sometime and check out his room.
Well, anything else?
That's all. I just had a lot of friends up Scotch Run and a lot of fond memories and.
Mm-hmm.
And I always went back, you know. I retained friendships with a lot of the people. Mm-hmm. And like I say, it was a safe, great place to grow up.
And do you, most of those friends, they don't live there anymore?
No, a lot of them, because they, you know, there was the coal mines. There used to be many coal mines up and down Scott's Run. The train used to run right there in front of the museum. Okay. You know, there's railroad tracks right there, and you go maybe twice a day. And it was closer than from here to that wall, the train. Wow. You know, it'd go through there. And what I was going to say is I went to school, elementary school, at Purse Glove, which was between Liberty and Osage. Mm-hmm. And junior high school, I went to Osage. And at that time, they had for the African Americans, they had their school up on top of the hill, and mm-hmm. and the rest of us were down in the Osage Junior High School. And then in 1954, I'm pretty sure it was 1954 is when we integrated. And Mr. Stevenson, who later became superintendent of county schools, was the principal at the time. And he called everyone together in the gym first day of school and said, there will be no problems or no trouble. And he was absolutely right. Mm-hmm. I don't recall of one racial incident. Mm-hmm. And I was there during the 8th and 9th grade when we integrated. Mm-hmm. And there was not one racial incident. Mm-hmm. And we had a lot of the African Americans going to school there, and mm-hmm. we were all friends.
Yeah. And that would have been middle school?
That would have been junior high school, yeah, was 7th to 9th. Yeah. But that Osage school went from 1st through the 9th. Okay. But the school that I went to at Purse Glove, there was three different buildings, and it went from 1st to 5th, and then you would go to Osage from 6th to 9th. But junior high was considered 7th through 9th.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
See you at the coffee shop tomorrow.
Well, I hope so. There's a West Virginia professor that I got on the Mon General Hospital board, Robert Most, as far as taxes are concerned, the brightest guy in the state of West Virginia. Mm-hmm. And he died of a brain tumor. Mm-hmm. And they're having a service for him tomorrow at 11 o'clock at the Alumni Center. So I'm not sure that I'm going to be at Osage. Okay. Well, yeah, because I got him on the Mon Health System Board. He was a great fellow.